Welcome back. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Rachel.
And today's a very special episode. This is our 10th episode.
Oh.
Can you believe it that we made it this far?
No.
You had no idea, did you?
I had no idea.
Rachel doesn't listen to the podcast. She hates the sound of her own voice.
I don't. I mean, I do. I hate the sound of my own voice, but I don't listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Traitor.
Traitor?
I name you Traitor.
I supply all the jokes. Okay.
You make me laugh. That it makes it okay. But anyway, yeah. So every week we watch a formative movie from our childhoods. Usually my childhood, because that's more fun for Rachel to get frustrated and angry with. And we review it in the vein of gender equality, race, masculinity, etc., etc. And Rachel makes us a delicious sugar-free treat.
Uh-huh.
And that is a recipe for disaster. All right. So, Rachel, what delicious sugar-free treat are you making for us today?
First of all, I need to point out that you sounded a little bit like Finnegan Pitchwhistle.
Oh, Finnegan. I'm mixing podcasts, I guess.
You are. You're mixing podcasts.
Oh, no. I'm becoming my D&D character. Oh, God. He's such a dick.
Yes. So, Rachel, what are we having today?
Top of the morning to you.
The finest race of people to have ever peeled a potato.
For those of you that are extremely confused, we have our friend Phil has a podcast called Fire and Blankets that you can also check out, where he records our Dungeons & Dragons game and also our Call of Cthulhu game. And in Dungeons & Dragons, I'm an Irish halfling named Finnegan Pitchwhistle, who's a incredibly arrogant asshole. So, you know, just another version of myself. But anyway, Rachel, what are you making for us today?
I am making this is my own recipe. They're going to be chocolate chip coconut cookies. With lots of flaked coconut and a little bit of coconut flour, a little bit of almond flour, carob chips, and erythritol as usual.
Exactly. What are carob chips?
So carob is...
It sounds appealing.
Well, you've had it before. Carob is a chocolate substitute. A lot of vegans use it because it's...
Oh, okay,
it
doesn't
have... Generally doesn't have dairy in it. These are almost always vegan.
And are they sugar-free also, or sugar-light?
They are unsweetened.
Okay.
Which means, and they're actually made from a plant, which gives them their natural sweetness.
Oh, okay.
So
a little bit healthier than maybe like cane sugar or...
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, and it's not like the total sugars on this is 7 grams for 2 tablespoons, which is like half of sugar or half of chocolate chips.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited for cookies.
You're always excited for cookies.
Well,
you love cookies.
I do. Cookies are one of my favorite vehicles for dessert consumption. I think they're just like, I mean, they're basically, if not bite sized, then they're, you know, easily consumable in like 2 or 3 bites.
It's true. I'm trying these carob
chips. So they're
chips.
Satisfying.
They're not chocolate, but they are really interesting.
They are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of got like a weird, almost a spicy tinge to it.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe that.
I don't either.
It's definitely still got the bitterness that chocolate has, which I think is kind of what works well with chocolate in particular, is like the bitter and sweet kind of mixed together.
That's right.
If we've got this bitter flavor here with the carob, add that erythritol into the cookie dough. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that should give us the same effect, I think, right?
Yeah.
And of course, coconut is always great.
Mm-hmm. Always, it's like my favorite. I love the texture of it. And coconut's really good, too, because it's really high in fiber.
Yeah.
As long as you get the unsweetened.
So it'll help your poops, too.
It'll help your poops, too. Coconut.
These cookies will heal your butt.
Yes.
I'm making that claim right now.
I'm a doctor. These statements have not been approved by the FDA.
So what inspired you to make these cookies today, Rachel?
So sometimes when we go to the Rouses on Carrollton, they have a really good specialty food section, and we walk through there because I always want to go get a kombucha.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of person I am.
And we were looking for powdered swerve back there, too.
Yeah, we were.
Yeah.
And I saw unsweetened flaked coconut and coconut flour and carob chips, a bunch of these, like, fun specialty ingredients that are hard to find at our Rouses up in Gentilly. Yeah. So I just bought them all, and I had these ingredients, and I was like, I gotta make something with them. So that's what these came out of.
See, I was curious too, if like, cause you bought these before last night, but last night we were there in that same specialty food section and got those,
coconut chips.
Or what are they called? Bear snacks?
Yeah. The coconut chips, yeah. the desiccated coconut.
Yeah. That are covered in chocolate or cocoa powder. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And they're good for you. And also full of fiber.
Yeah, it's true. So I just think it's funny that, you know, you had originally already picked these ingredients. And then we had coconut chocolate yesterday.
Yeah.
But I am so excited because I love that flavor and I really want a lot more. Anything else you need to tell us while you're making this? Any special tips or tricks about how to make this work as well as possible?
Don't overbeat your batter, you know. That's probably a good life lesson. Don't overbeat your batter. That applies to everyone.
Yeah, somebody told me that when I was 13. I was grateful for the advice.
They're like, you'll grow hair on your palms.
You'll go blind. You overbeat your batter.
Your future wife won't love you.
Exactly. I guess don't overbeat the batter, but other than that, it's, you know, it's cookies. Should be fairly straightforward, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I'm excited. Let's get to making these, and then we'll come back and try them out.
Cool beans.
Talk about the movie. Okay, so, chocolate chip coconut cookies.
Yes.
They look amazing.
I'm gonna confess, I sneaked a little corner off of one.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Okay, so did you also sneak off to the divorce lawyer to file some paperwork? Because that's the next step.
That's the severity of my impasse.
Yeah. We do everything together. There's one who goes first.
It was like whenever you ate my Rally's fries and you were like, being married means you share everything. And I was like, you left me two fries.
Look, when it works for me, then that's the rule. But when it works against me, then we can just ignore those rules.
All right, George W. Bush.
Anyway, let's talk about how these cookies look right off the bat. Okay. Yeah. Don't call me George W. Bush. That's so cruel.
It's pretty mean. But
it is. It's horrible.
But I was more proud of how topical and scathing that joke was. Oh, but anyway, whatever. Let's talk about cookies. It's fine.
First thing right off the bat that I like about these cookies is how thin they are.
And
they feel crispy.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about that because I love that texture in cookies. Even though I love, like, you know, fluffy, soft cookies too.
Right.
I think crispy cookies have something special going for them.
Yeah, there's a place in everybody's heart for a crispy cookie.
Yeah. What makes them crispy like that? How do they get so thin?
So these guys, the interesting thing is with sugar-free baking, I've been trying to get, it's hard to get this texture.
Sure.
Because sugar, whenever it bakes, the crystalline structure changes and it melts down and then it recrystallizes and it makes it like a crunchy candy, you know, type texture.
With
sugar-free baking, it's really hard to achieve that because you don't have the same structure as table sugar with erythritol.
Gotcha.
And so with these guys, what I did was I used just a little bit of flour.
Okay. Normal flour?
No, no. Almond flour and coconut flour.
Oh, okay.
Just a little bit. And then I used all unsweetened coconut flakes and room temperature butter. And I like blended it together in the traditional way that you do for a cookie. But I made sure that the batter was a little bit, it's not as stiff.
Okay.
As a fudgier or softer
cookie.
So
a little bit of a thinner batter.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And that would account for the size too, because it kind of like spreads out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's bite into these because I'm having trouble just standing here talking about them.
Okay.
Oh my God. Okay, right off the bat, I want to talk about that crunch.
Mm-hmm.
It's a delicious way to bite into a cookie. Super satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Where it just gives you that crunch noise.
Yeah.
And you even told me that, like, it's like scientifically researched that food is more satisfying when it has a crunch noise. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, there's an awesome New York Times article. It's in the archive about food science. If you can find it. It's immense and genius. Find it. Because it talks about like the laboratory studies for the textures and smells and sights that make people love food.
Mm-hmm.
But it also talks about how food is this, particularly mass-produced food, is this huge capitalist endeavor to always be in our pocketbooks.
Yeah.
So check it out.
It makes it super appealing. I like when you described it to me, it was like, oh, this checks off all the boxes as to why I'm addicted to Raising Cane's.
Yep.
Because it is just, I mean, there's that satisfying crunch when you bite into it. It's salty. It's got...
That's our dog drinking water, by the way. That's not us eating cookies.
If you can hear that in the background, yeah.
I'm sure they can.
But anyway, yeah, like, you know, that those Raising Cane's fried chicken has, like, the crunch, it has the salt, you got the sweetness of a soda that goes along with it, and it all, like, kind of pops in your mouth and fizzes and crackles, and you're just like, oh, it's 4th of July going on in my taste buds.
Well, and it's a lot of fat. It's everything that we've evolved to want.
Yeah.
Like, and when we were cavemen crawling on the face of this planet, it was like, oh my God, I just found an entire mammoth, frozen mammoth carcass. It has tons of energy-rich fat. I'm going to live. So that's what our brains still think. When you bite into...
I'm going to be fat in a time when people are starving.
Well, more just like, I'm going to not starve to death.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right now. I'm going to survive.
Not for the foreseeable future. Unless someone comes along with a bigger rock than me.
I'm going to survive and I'm going to fuck and I'm going to make caveman babies. And then I'm going to die.
But back to cookies.
Cookies, yeah.
So yeah, I love the crunch when you bite into it. I can't tell that the carob is not chocolate.
Yeah.
It contributes exactly the same thing. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love the texture of the coconut. Shredded coconut in there.
I do too. It's crispy. The other thing, good thing about using coconut, like it's unsweetened coconut and it's like in a larger flake, is it approximates the texture of oats.
Oh, yeah.
Because
they do kind of look like oatmeal cookies.
They do. And you know, oats are good for you, but they still have like lots of carbohydrates. Whereas coconut doesn't have nearly as many carbohydrates and still has like twice the amount of fiber.
Mm.
And so does carob. Carob has a ton of fiber in it. Get ready. These are very fibrous cookies.
We've just cleaned your poop chute for you. You're welcome.
You're welcome. Gross.
Yeah, I mean, the flavor of these is so good. I like that it kind of has like a lighter feel on my tongue, mm-hmm. I think, than like a traditional chocolate chip coconut cookie mm-hmm. with sugar in it. And it kind of, it almost melts in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of contributed by the, like, thinness of the cookie and everything. Like, it just kind of can dissolve and just slide down your throat. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's a high fat ratio in these cookies.
Yeah.
Like...
Well, anyway, that was amazing. I would definitely say that that's a delight.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say delight. I felt pretty... Once they came out of the oven, I was like, oh, yes. Good job, Rachel. Great job.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent choice for episode 10. I'm really happy with these cookies. We're going to eat a lot more of them.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back to talk about the movie. Thank you. Oh, Rachel. I am really excited. I've been holding off on this movie for a little while because I've just really wanted you to see some other stuff, get broken in, and then watch this extremely problematic movie that that I know we're both going to hate and will provide plenty of fodder. Today we're watching Ghostbusters.
Man. Okay.
80s movie, Bill Murray. I got the inspiration definitely struck a little bit when we were watching Space Jam, because we talked about a little bit about Murray fatigue. And yeah. I think that Bill Murray was kind of from a certain time and a certain place. And that style of humor was like really funny in the day to a certain audience, mainly smarmy white men.
And 12-year-old boys. Don't forget 12-year-old boys. I do not like Bill Murray. I mean, I'm sure he's a fine human.
But have you ever liked Bill Murray?
No, never.
No?
I've never liked him. Even as a kid, he made me uncomfortable.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of something that you might like him in, and I really can't think of much.
I hate Wes Anderson, too. Come at me, bros! So I hated him in The Life Aquatic.
Yeah.
And was he in other Wes Anderson films? I'm sure.
Yeah, he's in a bunch. I mean, he's in Rushmore. He was in Royal Tenenbaums. He was briefly in the Darjeeling Limited, which is like the worst one. The most boringest one.
The Darjeeling Limited is the worst. In fact, the only Wes Anderson movie that I actually do like, I do like the Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, we've talked about that and we've watched it together a couple of times.
But anyway, the Royal Tenenbaums is sadly genius, but it's the only spark of genius that ever was in a Wes Anderson film. I can't stand it. And I think I associate Bill Murray a lot with Wes Anderson films.
Really?
I do. And you know, I saw him in Caddyshack and shit when I was a kid. But I really wasn't allowed to watch those movies, so I only saw him with my cousins. And
yeah.
My cousins sucked. You heard that, cousins? You suck.
So I specifically want to talk about this movie in terms of the all-female reboot that we saw. That was, what was that, a couple years ago? 2016?
Yes.
People were making such a huge deal out of it.
Ghostbusters Gate. Vagina Gate. Ovaries before broveries.
But before we get into that... You ridiculous human. Before we get into that, what do you remember? What experience did you have when you first saw Ghostbusters, if you can remember? Or what memories do you have of this movie?
Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
I was a little kid... And I've always been fascinated. This is so funny. Ever since I was a little kid, I've always been fascinated in like the evil side and like the villains. I always sympathized with Scar a lot.
He was basically a Nazi.
We're not talking about that right now.
All right.
Because there's all kinds of layers there, but I'm not even going into it.
Yeah. We'll watch that one eventually, too.
Yeah, The Lion King, and then I'll talk about... We can just talk about Hamlet the entire time, which is what I'll do.
Well, I'll talk about my love for Elton John the entire time. That'll pretty much be it.
All right. So we'll cancel each other out on that one, I guess. Anyway, my first experience with Ghostbusters was, like I was saying, when I was a little kid, ever since I was even just like a little bitty kid,
mm-hmm.
I really liked, like... scary stuff and evil stuff, and I liked dragons and I liked Smaug a lot. I thought Smaug was cool as shit in The Hobbit. Not in the movie, but in the book.
Yeah.
I gotta give kudos. My dad's got lots of problems, but he used to read to me.
Sure.
And he read The Hobbit to me, and he had this like awesome, terrifying dragon voice that he used.
Oh, nice.
And because I was so fascinated with dragons, he would like draw me dragons. And so you know, Bob's layered.
Yeah, complicated.
Complicated. But I was always fascinated with that kind of stuff. And so I begged my parents. I'd beg them to let me watch scary movies.
Sure.
It's like, please, I want to watch a scary movie. Because, like, when you start with, you know, Lord of the Rings scary. That's still pretty scary.
Yeah.
And the Bible scary. Oh, man. Oh, I mean,
there's nothing that's much scarier than the Bible.
And
especially if you're a woman.
Especially if you're a woman.
Oh, my God.
And, like, you're in a congregation of all adults. This was my childhood. I was in a congregation of all adults. I was the only kid besides my brother.
Yeah.
And I would have to sit in adult church. We didn't have children's church because I was the only child. And so the pastor was this intense Cajun guy named Brother Ray, who he had converted from Catholicism to being a Baptist minister. So he had like all the terrifying guilt and darkness of the Catholic Church, and then just like glommed it on top of like fundamentalist Baptist fire and brimstone.
Yeah.
And it was just the most insane experience. And it was like a wild ride. And he liked Isaiah and he liked Revelations and would be like, "And the beast did rise." Well, that's not the right accent. I can't do a Cajun accent very well, but it was akin to that. The beast will rise out of the sea, and the sea will give up her dead. And I would be sitting in there in my, like, super itchy pantyhose and, like, dress right next to my mom and be like, "Oh, God, there's going to be a dragon with seven heads that comes out of the sea, and a whore of Babylon will ride on his head."
Yeah. You know, I think it's interesting that you mentioned that, specifically because one of the things I remember very strongly about this movie is prophecy. Because they're like, you're mm-hmm. mentioning that preacher who really loved prophetic books of the Bible.
Yeah.
With horrifying things that are going to come to pass or whatever.
Yeah.
And in this movie, like, there really is a very strong element of that. Like, kind of the core plot of the movie is that there's this demon who's going to be named Gozer, who's going to be, like, you know, resurrected and destroy the earth. And they, like, read some prophecy about it when they're, like, researching.
Yeah. Well, and that's the point I was getting to.
Yeah.
Like, that's what... And so I think that maybe my parents thought this was an... Like, because of that, they thought, okay, yeah, I guess she hears scary enough shit in church about demons. Let's just let her watch Ghostbusters.
Yeah, why not?
And I was like, I don't know, maybe 8 and something like that, and saw it.
See, I'm surprised that your parents didn't think this was, like, heresy or something like that. Because that seems more up their alley. But I guess maybe not. Maybe I've got them wrong on that. And they really were like... maybe those type of prophetic Christians can like fit this into their mythology.
I think they kind of did. I don't know.
Like, who's to say that Gozer isn't like some lesser demon that serves Satan or whatever? Like, who knows?
Yeah.
It's all bananas.
It's all bananas, just like Christianity.
Yeah, read the prophetic books of the Bible. They're all bananas.
They are all bananas. They're awesome to read.
Quote me. Yeah, they are. They're really fun, especially if you're on LSD. But when...
Oh! Been doing stuff behind my back there.
So, for this movie... I guess when I saw it, when I was growing up, I had to have been around the same age, I think, like 8 to 10.
Yeah.
I don't remember the specific circumstance of watching this movie, but I do remember it was like an experience I had with my dad, you know, like bonding experience where we watched this movie. And it's like, oh, you know, there's stuff for the adults and there's all the cool gadgetry. And because I like technology stuff. I think I've mentioned that on the podcast before, but I like gadgets a lot. Some of my favorite presents that you've ever gotten me are gadgets of some kind.
You do love gadgets.
I just think they're really neat. I think that I like inventions and I like crazy, weird science and stuff like that. I just think it's interesting.
That's a movie we're never going to watch.
No, and in fact, I never saw Weird Science.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, I did, and it was kind of formative to my sexuality. I will say that.
Well. Weird Science and Cruel Intentions. Creating the Rachel that you see before you today.
Shit gets weird.
But when I say weird science, you know what I mean. Like mad scientists and like people with, you know, IQs that are like phone numbers, but they're creating like insane things that have really no purpose other than, you know, some kind of maniacal mustache twirling plot. I think that kind of stuff is really interesting.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's fun.
And so, yeah, I remember Ghostbusters fondly as a kid.
Yeah.
Because I liked all of that stuff. I wanted all the toys that were being sold along with it. I loved the cartoon show. I think it was like The Adventures of the Real Ghostbusters, or maybe just called The Real Ghostbusters.
I never saw it. I never heard of that.
Well, there were two different Ghostbusters cartoons. And the original one had none of the cast members from, like, none of the characters from the movie Ghostbusters or any of that. It was just this, its own thing.
It's like, so it's then, in the same universe.
I don't, you know, I never saw the original one. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but I'm pretty sure that the original Ghostbusters was just its own thing, like not related to the movie. And so that's why they had to come out with the new cartoon that was called The Real Ghostbusters.
Oh.
So it's like, oh, this is the Ghostbusters that you guys actually know, you dum-dums. Like, here, this is the one you wanted.
This is the one you wanted, you fucking assholes, here.
Like, if you were, you know, not smart and standing in the video store and looking at two videos in front of you on the wall, and one says Ghostbusters and the other says The Real Ghostbusters, which one are you going to pick? It's The Real Ghostbusters, dummy. That's the one you're going to take.
Is that the one you want?
Yeah.
Here, take it.
But I remember that stuff. I really love the little box device that they throw out to capture ghosts. It opens up and, like, sucks them in there.
Yeah.
And
well, I never got to tell you if I liked it or didn't like it.
Oh, well, yeah. That's you know, we're talking about it right now.
Yeah.
Go on. What did you think?
Because
when you were a kid.
Yeah, like, all that background was just to say that I watched it and was like, this isn't that scary. And was upset.
Oh man, really? Like, yeah. Okay. There were parts in this movie when I was a kid that really legitimately scared me. Not much, because a lot of it is very goofy and silly, but,
I was a serious child, Jordan.
you are still a serious child. That is how I would describe you to people who don't know you. Rachel is a serious child.
A serious child. Whatever, my house is so clean, I'm not a child.
You've seriously done all your chores. Very seriously.
Oh, fuck you.
But
I would just call you a child.
I would say that's accurate. I'm a child that thinks he's a man. That's the thing. That's what I am.
I'm a child that thinks she's a woman. It's fair. All right.
Go ahead. But yeah, so this part that stuck out to me that really scared me when I was a kid was there's a part where Sigourney Weaver's character is having a bunch of, like, crazy shit happening to her in her apartment or whatever.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's starting to be haunted or whatever the fuck. And she opens her fridge and, like, looks in it, and it's like a doorway to another dimension.
Oh,
and there's,
yeah,
like, horrifying things going on. And she's like, oh, my God. Like, that scared the shit out of me
when
I was a little kid. Yeah, it did. And just, like, the people, like, Rick Moranis getting possessed by, like, that dog demon creature or whatever was pretty scary to me.
Oh, I did like that. I was charmed by that.
Oh, you were charmed by it. I was, you know, wetting my pants.
And I was charmed by it. I liked the dog demon.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they look more like a molded Tootsie Roll than anything.
But I liked them. I thought they were funny.
Yeah.
And cute.
So, you know, I guess since you didn't find it very scary, does that mean overall you didn't like it as a kid?
Well, it was sold to me as something that was a scary movie.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny is that my dad got so sick of me being like, these movies aren't scary, that he fucking plopped me down in front of The Exorcist when I was like 13.
He's like, oh, here you go.
Yeah. And I watched it and I was scared shitless.
Yeah.
And was just like so scared of everything in the house for like months.
Yeah.
And it was the best.
I mean, so thinking about this movie as a horror movie, I definitely don't think that it falls into that genre at all.
No.
Like, I don't even think it fits in the genre of, like, horror comedy or comedy horror, whatever you want to call it.
There are ghosts in it.
Yeah, this is a straight-up comedy with supernatural elements to it.
Yeah,
and that's it.
And sci-fi. I would say sci-fi.
Some sci-fi, yeah. I would say so, yeah.
But, like, I was so disappointed. So the point is, it was sold to me as a horror movie. It was not scary. I was disappointed in that aspect.
Yeah.
I was disappointed that there were no, like, Sigourney Weaver's in it. And I loved it when she turns into the demon witch or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah.
She turns into. I loved that part. But there weren't, like, enough women in it to keep me interested. These were all, like, middle-aged men who were not attractive or interesting, really.
Yeah.
And so there was nothing really for me with this film except for Sigourney Weaver turning into a demon witch.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, like I said, for me, it was a big part of my childhood, but nothing that deserves or that warrants, like, getting angry at a remake or, like, screaming at some women I don't know on the internet.
Threatening to rape them and go to their house and kill them. Listeners, don't do that.
Yeah, it's really not worth it at all. And you're horrible for doing so.
But who does that? Who threatens to hurt somebody that violently over a movie?
Yeah.
It's and not even a very Losers. Good That's movie. Who. It's like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, I we'll talk about this in terms of, well, let's talk about expectations for this movie.
Okay, all right, yeah.
And we'll talk about the female reboot in the main review section, because then we'll have this movie fresh in our minds.
That's fine. That's fair.
Expectations for this movie. I know I'm not going to like this movie. I know it. Like, I remember watching it a few years back.
Yeah.
Or maybe just a couple years back when the new one came out.
Yeah, we watched it together.
And I was like, really? This was the movie that is, like, adored and people are, like, fighting for? Like, it's... The humor is very dated. There's, like, Bill Murray's character, if I remember right, is, like, creepy and a little rapey.
And you're just like, oh.
Yeah, like, he's just annoying and an asshole. Like,
yeah, annoying and an asshole.
Going through life just acting like a dick. Which is, I mean, the role models in this movie, I mean, no matter which one you pick, none of them are good role models for kids. So it's not like,
no.
Especially not Bill Murray. Maybe Dan Aykroyd, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe.
Egon is like completely consumed in his work and is, I mean, he's super smart, which is nice, but like, he doesn't really have much of a personality outside of that. So like, I mean, he has absolutely zero social skills. Which, you know, makes sense, because the people who are getting mad at this movie, the female reboot movie, also have no social skills. So it's difficult.
Why'd they have to take this from me? No one took anything from you. They just put another thing out there that you didn't have to watch, you fucking babies! I hope you hear this, you fucking babies.
Oh my god. And the treatment of women in this movie is not great. If I remember right, there are a sum total of two women in this movie.
I think we see boobs, or at least like the hint of boobs.
Sigourney Weaver's character is like pretty much constantly sexualized, mostly by Bill Murray, who, despite her rejection of his advances, like continues to pester her throughout the entire movie. Rick Moranis' character does the same thing. Like, she gets pretty much half naked at one point. Sigourney Weaver's character is completely, like, either a sex object for men or a damsel in distress.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that she gets possessed by, the gatekeeper or whatever. I don't remember what demon it is. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm expecting a lot of problems with that.
Sure.
I'm expecting some tokenism for race.
Oh, yeah.
Since Ernie Hudson is just, like, the only black person in this movie that I remember. And just kind of, like, shows up near the midway through and is kind of like, hey, I'm a janitor. Do you guys need some help? I'd rather have this job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm almost positive that I'm going to hate this movie. What about you?
Oh, yeah, I mean... I hate the people that love it, so
yeah.
I'm going to hate this movie. And I'm going to hate this movie for any number of reasons. I didn't like it much when I was a little girl, so I don't even find the sci-fi supernatural aspect of it charming, which that's the easiest fucking part for me. Like, throw some really good magic in there, and I'm willing to forgive some things.
And so you've got a long hour and a half ahead of you.
At least it's only an hour and a half.
Yeah, that is nice.
I'll give it that.
And I'm just guessing off the top of my head. It could be 3 hours. Who knows?
Oh, my God. I'm really glad you have that loaded handgun there on the coffee table so I can kill myself.
Oh, yeah.
The two-hour mark.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't think I could put up with that much of this. But yeah, you know, I'm excited to see it, and I'm excited for us to talk about it. And then hopefully never watch it again. That would be nice.
Yeah, and then we can talk about it. I can cuss at some more man babies in public, and then eat a cookie and go to sleep.
Perfect.
The end.
Well, let's watch this movie, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Perfect.
Be right back. So, Ghostbusters.
Fucking Ghostbusters.
Rachel, give us the blurb that would be on the back of your DVD box.
White man treads on the backs of women and people of color to get to the top.
Oh man, yeah, that can work here too, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's.
I'm not backing down from that one.
The characters in this are. Yeah, I mean, all the main characters are white. People can tell me that Ernie Hudson is, like, a full part of this movie all they want, but...
They're lying to themselves.
That's bullshit. Yeah. Like, he shows up, like, halfway through the movie, and yes, he becomes a Ghostbuster, which is great, but, like, you know, compared to Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, and Bill Murray, he does not get the lines or the screen time.
Or the backstory,
or really anything interesting about his character.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the fact that he's just, like, a working stiff.
Yeah.
But I do want to say, I actually... So, you know, race isn't treated wonderfully in this movie or anything. Mm-hmm. But I do like it compared to movies nowadays in that there are actual black people that are just around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and women that hold various jobs that, you know, like, just the guy who comes in and says one line, like, hey, the Ghostbusters are here, Mr. Mayor. Like, that guy's black.
Yeah.
Like, in movies nowadays, it feels like...
There has to be attention drawn to everyone's race.
Yeah, the world is very white. Like, in the... All the extras are white.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have, like, you know, the one black friend character who's a token in that movie. And I appreciate about this movie that the world has some color to it.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. It's New York. It ought to.
Yeah, it makes sense. So let's start with what we liked about this movie, because it's a short list.
Yeah. I thought the puppets and the animatronics and the creature effects were pretty good.
Yeah, I like that part. I didn't like, the effects that were super dated are when they had to, like, superimpose a moving image onto the film or whatever.
Yeah.
To, like, have the dog chase him or something like that.
Those looked great.
Really bad. Slimer looks okay, but he's pretty bad too.
He's pretty unsettling still.
Yeah, and that's because they like used a puppet and then just made it translucent on the film, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
A good way to do that, but you know, it still kind of comes together with a cheesy look.
Yeah, but I think that's the whole point of the movie.
Yeah,
he's pulpy and cheesy.
You're right, it is. But I was just thinking about special effects while we were watching the movie because of some of the newspaper articles we were reading earlier about, like, Hollywood effects and how, like, where they're, like, these stories that are coming out that have, like, crazy computer-animated entire locations and characters and all that stuff. And while, yeah, I don't think it's as good as practical effects, like, I do think that it allows people to tell different stories. I just wish that they would use their imagination a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, it's too easy. They just have too much at their fingertips, and so nothing is interesting anymore.
Yeah, like when you have the possibility to show literally anything, like you better have a fucking good creative vision for it, because like I don't want to just see the same shit over and over again.
Well, you could have a whole movie that's just a little boy flying a drone. And he comes up on a dragon flying in the air, and he swoops the drone in really close to the dragon's butthole. Like, you could do that now, because you have CG. I'm not going to tell you the end of this story. It's a tragedy.
Wow. That movie's getting a hard R rating, for sure.
Just tracking puddle for like 20 minutes.
Oh my God, yeah. That one, hard R, for sure.
Yeah.
Strong graphic nudity.
Dragon nudity. Jonah Hill could be the voice of the dragon's butthole.
Oh my God. Wow, you're on a roll.
somebody call the producers. I've got a real winner here.
I mean, I would definitely pay to see that movie, but I don't think it's ever going to exist. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of one of the things about this movie is that there are there's limitations on, oh, you're just cracking up over there. But there were limitations on the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to kind of work within a framework and figure things out.
Right.
And so overall, like, I think the story progression of this movie is done effectively. And sure. I think it's,
it's done. It is a structure. There is a structure to it. The structure is shoddily constructed sometimes in places.
It's true, but I just mean that, like, you know, all the scenes that are in this movie seem to have an actual purpose, which is nice.
Yeah. They're not just like, look at these guns and let me drop some exposition here.
Yeah, like the purpose of propelling the events forward in the story so that you can, you know, the events unfold and you're interested and want to know what happens next.
Right.
Like, that's great. All of that is what is... should be baseline for a movie.
Yeah.
Like, if you're able to do that, okay, you should be making movies in the first place. Way to go. Now we start to talk about, like, what is what you did worth watching? Is it something, I don't know, is it something that someone might look at later and say, great? I don't think so with this movie.
Well, no. I would put this movie, on the same quality level as Spring Breakers. They're very divergent films, but hear me out. The structure is interesting, but a little strange in both.
Yeah.
It's a strange vision where there's really only one interesting character because, like, the film can't focus on anything for too long.
Too many main characters.
Yeah, too much. Yeah. And so, like, that's the same quality. Like, they both entertained me in a way.
Yeah.
Personally, I would have just rather turned off the dialogue for Spring Breakers and listened to, like, some stoner metal while I watched it.
Wow, that is a really specific reference.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for this movie, like, like you said, there's so many characters. Bill Murray is, I think, to me, is very obviously the lead character.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is a Bill Murray movie. It's not an ensemble cast movie. But there are people in it that you're like, oh, you know, I like that guy. I like
Rick Moranis.
You got Sigourney Weaver. I mean, these are not small names.
No.
Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis and, that's about it.
Yeah.
Like, these people are big names, but you've got Bill Murray who's kind of, like, hogging all the scenes and...
Yes.
His character is the main drawback of this movie for me.
Oh, yeah. I have, like, reams of notes here about his character.
Well, let's get into it. Because summarizing this guy is just saying, I mean, he's a, like, entitled, sarcastic male stereotype, I guess.
Yeah.
That's, like, kind of portrayed as, you know, lovable and the person that the boys watching this movie should project themselves on.
Yes, is terrifying.
Be like this guy. He's cool and funny and he gets the girl.
Yeah.
But the problem is how he does it.
Yeah, because she didn't really have any say or agency in getting got.
Yeah. We were talking during the movie, though, that it was surprising that she actually had a job in this. Because we were like about halfway through, and I think you said something along the lines of like, what is it that she does? She just like exercises and chops vegetables.
Yeah, she exercises.
which is pretty funny because it was like, man, I mean, this movie's an hour 45, and it was about almost an hour before we see her do anything that's not chopping vegetables and exercising.
Like, and watching TV.
Watching TV while exercising.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, she does work in the symphony.
Or yeah.
She plays viola.
Uh-huh.
So at least she's not some unemployed woman who's just, you know, around for men.
Yeah, exactly.
But she still is
she
in
is.
This movie.
Yeah, she's around for men. But we're still talking about how Bill Murray's character is.
Well, I think it's
problem.
So closely tied to how this movie treats women.
Sure.
That it kind of goes hand in hand. But go ahead. Start us out.
So these, I'll just read you the notes
okay.
that I've written
yeah.
down. Bill Murray, creepy, predatory, professor flirting.
Right. You mentioned that because at the very beginning of the movie, he's doing a quote-unquote experiment on
yeah.
some of the students. He has a male student and a female student.
Yeah.
And he seems to take great pleasure in torturing the male student by giving him an electroshock when he's
yeah.
wrong with his guesses of what's on the card. And then no matter what the woman says, he's, you know, taking her side and being like, oh, yeah, that was totally right. Like...
Yeah, and he's, like, winking at her and flirting with her.
Yeah.
And you know that if these are students who show up for a $5 study, they're most likely freshmen.
Yeah.
The girl was most likely 18.
And so, you know, I'm okay with this character existing in this movie if they're treated like this person would be treated in reality. Because if a professor acted like this, and professors do act like this sometimes.
Yeah.
It's not greeted with... the warmth and reception that this portrayal would suggest. Because the student is, like, kind of into it a little bit. Like, I think it portrays her as being naive, but also, like, oh, you know, he's funny and I kind of like him. Because she mentions, like, he's like, would you mind coming back here? And she just, like, mentions a time as if she's, like, eager to come back.
Still doesn't matter. There's a power imbalance there.
I know that, but that's what I'm saying is that the portrayal is wrong. Because the power imbalance exists in reality, but it doesn't show that aspect here.
Yeah.
And it doesn't show it as negative when it
yeah.
should be. This is portrayed as like positive reinforcement of really bad behavior.
Yes, precisely. I agree.
And so like this would never happen in real life.
I don't know.
Meaning... it would never happen. Like, so a man goes, I'm talking to men here. When
oh,
men
okay.
go out and have an expectation that like, oh, I'm going to act this way to a woman.
Oh, yeah.
And she's going to be receptive. No, that's not how it's going to work out.
No, it's not. 99% of the time, it's not. Every once in a while, you'll get somebody who's into it. And good for you guys. Have consensual sex. Do it all over your house. I don't care. But like,
just keep it to yourself.
Yeah. But like, I just... most women, if he came at me like that, I'd be like, I'm over. Fuck this. Goodbye.
Yeah.
This is disgusting.
I mean, I would assume in reality that this professor, Professor Bill Murray, or Dr. Venkman, would have several sexual harassment claims against him. He'd still be working, of course, because that's the world we live in.
Oh, yeah.
But...
totally.
Everyone would know, you know, oh, you know, don't go alone to appointments with Dr. Venkman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, precisely. Also, let's see this other note I've made about Bill Murray. He asks this woman, he asks Sigourney Weaver's character if she's menstruating right now.
Oh, no, not Sigourney Weaver. The old librarian from the beginning, like, that sees the
oh,
ghost in the library.
Right. Yeah, that's right. He asks her if she's menstruating.
Right, because he's asking her, he's trying to, like, do, like, questions to rule things out. Like, he's,
yeah.
you know, if you have any history of mental illness.
Yeah.
History, like, do you use drugs, that kind of stuff? And then, are you menstruating right now?
And my Jewish friend, I don't know his name, the one who's like...
Harold Ramis.
Harold Ramis.
But it wasn't him, it's the one of the bystanders or whatever who like found her, or like the library's director, who says, what's that got to do with it?
Oh, are you sure?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I thought it was Harold Ramis.
I think it was the guy who called them. But still, like, is that character supposed to be, like, brushed off?
Who?
The one who says, like, what's that supposed to mean? Because he's like, are you menstruating?
Yeah.
And he goes, what is that supposed to mean?
Or what's that got to do with it?
What's that got to do with it? And he's like, get out of here, you stupid
yeah.
idiot. Like,
yeah.
I know what I'm doing. I'm a scientist.
Yeah, I feel like that's... And also, it's like, the joke's on you women. You're crazy when you're menstruating.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I'm less tolerant of your crap. But I'm not crazy.
Because there are certain points in this movie, and I think the movie flip-flops back and forth on whether or not we're supposed to like Bill Murray's character.
Right.
Because he's taken differently in different scenes.
Right. He is. It's uneven.
Yeah. Uneven. I don't like it because I feel like the majority of the time it's like, yes, like this guy, he's the good guy, he's doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
In a general sense.
Yeah.
But every now and then it like does have characters who acknowledge that he's like being at the very least extremely rude, if not like super sexist or predatory or any number of things.
He kisses Sigourney Weaver's passed out body. He like kisses her neck and her hand.
Yeah, like at first, because you were like, ew, like right away when he kisses her forehead, I think.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, not a huge deal because, you know, that's like, it can be portrayed as platonic or whatever to kiss somebody on the forehead when they go to sleep that you're just fond of. But then he goes and like starts sucking on her neck or something.
And like kissing her knuckles and stuff.
Yeah, and like breathing really deeply. And I'm just like, what the fuck is going on here? Like this woman is completely passed out and demon possessed.
Yeah.
And you're going to try and like get you some? Get the fuck out of here, Bill Murray.
Yeah, it was super gross.
It was. It was really creepy.
I couldn't trust that character at all.
Yeah.
And then he tries to intrude on Sigourney Weaver's apartment.
Yeah, when he comes over to inspect for ghosts, I guess, is the pretense. But he's really trying to get in her pants.
Yeah.
And he straight up just says, you know what, I love you. And she's like, okay, time to go. And
she asks him to leave like 3 times. And he sticks around. That's so scary. I told Jordan, I was like, well, what if the Orkin man came over here and, you know, acted that way? And then whenever I tried to kick him out of the house, he was like pushing the door.
Well, that's the thing that really scares me is that that's not a hypothetical situation. Like, those things happen all the time.
Yeah.
In the real world. It freaks me out. That's why I think this movie is so dangerous. Because so many people that like it are very much like Bill Murray. And they maybe that's the problem, is that they think that they're the hero because they're doing these things that they've seen heroes do.
Sure.
And how they've treated women and the rewards, quote unquote, that they get for acting that way.
Yeah.
And so they bring that into reality.
Yeah.
And then we have flawed values like this that get passed on into a whole generation of people who just like, I don't know, it frustrates me.
It's frustrating. It's very frustrating.
I'm sure it's much more frustrating for you.
It is.
Yeah.
I would say yes. Let me continue going down the line of the Bill Murray woes that I have. Besides him just trying to fucking stay in her apartment once she asked him to leave.
Yeah.
I said, people who love Ghostbusters hate women.
I don't know that that's true for all people. I think that this movie has some seriously flawed... okay, well, so we know the people we're talking about. We're both on the same page here. We're talking about people who had a real problem with the female Ghostbusters reboot.
Yeah.
Let's jump in. Yeah. So let's start by talking about how we felt about the new Ghostbusters movie.
It was fine.
I it was a movie I saw. I only saw it once. Did you see it any more than that?
No.
Yeah, so we saw it in the theater once together, and we laughed. We had a good time.
We did. It was The Broad, I think.
It was a pleasant evening. Yeah, The Broad Theater, I think. It was a pleasant evening, and we never watched the movie again, and we haven't really talked about it since. You know, it's a forgettable Hollywood movie, and I think that's just being honest. I'm glad that it was made. And I think that it was awesome that I think the women who are in it are fantastic. But I just think that this reboot just didn't quite do the same thing or quite motivate its audience as much as the original did to its audience, if that makes any sense.
I mean, it's fine. I'm really glad that little girls will be able to see some women represented on screen.
Yeah.
Because, like, that movie wasn't very good. The original book, Ghostbusters, wasn't very good, but it, like, trained up a whole generation of young men.
Yeah.
So maybe this will train up a generation of young women.
Yeah, and that's something to think about, because, like you just said, this movie, the Ghostbusters from 1984, is not very good either. So, they can still have a pretty strong effect on people. So I am wondering how the reboot will be in the public consciousness in like a decade or so.
Yeah.
Or like even when that generation grows up, like if they'll remember something like that from their childhood, if it'll be important to them.
Yeah.
I really don't know. I remember there being quite a bit of buzz around it, and I remember seeing lots of pictures in the news of like little girls in Ghostbusters costumes and stuff like that for Halloween. And I think that's great.
Yeah, but it's also like, if you think about little girls' Halloween costumes, we're generally so limited.
Yeah.
Because there's not much representation of women in the media. So you have like Wonder Woman costume, you could be Black Widow, you could be Poison Ivy, you could be Catwoman.
And then everything else is sexy version of a man's profession.
Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah. That's so funny. That's... sexy construction worker.
Or, well, there's also, like, sexy teacher.
Yeah, it's true.
So...
no, it doesn't matter. You can be degraded no matter what gender role you subscribe
that's
to.
That's right. Across the board.
That's what men are good at. But anyway...
best.
We're good at more things than that, but that's... we are really good at that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I didn't want people to get the impression before we started talking about this that we thought that the new Ghostbusters movie was like an amazing triumph.
Well,
or
it's
anything.
Not.
It
it's
was
just
great.
Okay.
It was great that there were so many women who got work. That's little, what I'm happy about.
And little girls who got to see themselves represented on screen, and maybe they'll want to be scientists instead of teachers. No, dissing on teachers. I'm the child of teachers, and I am a teacher.
Right. And so when this movie came out, the new one, like you remember, this was fucking crazy. Like people seemed to have a problem with the fact that it was going to exist at all.
I know.
Way beforehand. I mean, there was a website? I think it's called Return of Kings. They're like a, are they a MGTOW group or maybe
oh,
a...
then don't say that name. It'll summon their asses at this house.
If you say it three times, somebody shows up.
I'm going to have a fucking MGTOW knocking at my door with this fucking little trilby.
And starts talking about father's rights. Yeah, okay. So this website that is a extreme manosphere type group... started having like talking about how they were going to boycott this movie and how, you know, people shouldn't see it, like it's a waste because, you know, women are stealing everything from men and blah blah blah, like, oh my God, it's a fucking movie and you don't have to see it. The other movie is still there in all its mediocrity and you can go back and enjoy it in your fucking closet on your phone with some headphones on. And, you know, masturbate with your tears until it's over. Like, it's still there. You'll never lose it.
It is on the internet, y'all. It's stuck in not in our digital consciousness forever. You're such a baby. They're just babies.
Oh,
I can't
stand
it. It's like a fucking toddler. And she's sitting over there and she's perfectly content with her red ball. And then she sees that Billy has a fucking green ball. And she's like, well, shit, I want that one too. So she walks over and pushes Billy down. That's exactly the behavior. And then Billy starts crying. Everybody's upset. They're just toddlers.
But, and see, I love your metaphor because it can also be translated into... a metaphor for reality, if we take it just another way. Let's say Billy, because what really happens is that Billy's over there with his ball playing, and he decides, I'm going to draw a star on my ball. And he does, and he loves it. It's beautiful, and he plays with it for days and days, and you know, that defines his life. And then little Chrissy across the playground sees how much fun he's having with his ball that he drew a star on. And so she takes her ball and she draws a star on it and she has so much fun and plays with it for days and days. And Billy looks over and says, what the fuck are you doing?
I will kill you!
And he
then he says veiled internet threats to her house.
And he pulls down his pants and shows her his penis. And then he goes over and like stands there menacingly and says like, hey, I know where you fucking live.
Yeah.
And
that's really what happens.
And then says, take your ball and throw it in the fucking garbage. And then says some racist stuff, too, on top of that. Because, yeah. Like, that's gotta be there.
And just yells racist shit.
What the fuck is wrong with people? I don't understand. I do not get it.
Yeah, I don't understand either. Both of these films were just okay. Like, I would give them, you know, a D+. That's passing.
I mean, of course, I would much rather see all the actresses in the Ghostbusters reboot in an original screenplay movie that's a comedy that's funny. Like, exactly. They're funny women, and I'd love to see that. But we live in a system, or we live with a Hollywood system, that doesn't want to take any risks. So they're going to reboot and remake and rewrite every single story you've already heard and churn it back out for you again because they know that you will pay for that. They're not sure if you'll pay for something that's new.
Soylent Green is people!
Oh, man, I'm starting to rant over here, aren't I? Sorry.
But really, that's the whole idea.
It pisses me off. I love Kate McKinnon, and I've got to see her in fucking a Ghostbusters reboot. I want to see her in something else. She's hilarious.
She is hilarious, but she's getting a lot of work.
She was one of the better parts of that movie, too.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, hell yes.
Yeah, because she is one of the funniest women alive right now, I think.
Kate McKesson, you're in my top three lesbians.
Yeah.
If you hear this, just know that.
Her impression of Jeff Sessions, I love it because she looks like a little Keebler elf. Anyway, we're talking too much about 2016 things. Ghostbusters and all the things that come from that. So yeah, needless to say, the backlash made us crazy. But these are the type of people who love the original Ghostbusters. And yeah. I don't think it's hard to look at the movie and understand why they act that way.
Well, yeah. Like I said, the way that Bill Murray treats women, the way that the writers treat women.
Yeah.
It's just like, they're expendable, they're needy, they're whiny, they need too much, we hate them. Oh, we hate women, is basically what the screenwriting says to me in this movie.
Yeah, they don't give... I mean, there's two named female characters in this movie.
Yeah, and I don't know their names. I've been calling one Sigourney Weaver.
I don't remember their names either.
And one the secretary.
Sigourney Weaver and the secretary, yeah. And while the secretary... I think you could actually make an argument that the secretary is more of a feminist character than... Sigourney Weaver's character, in that she, like, actually works, has a personality, and, like, clear wants and needs of her own.
In
little ways.
But she never talks to another woman about anything other than men.
Exactly. So if it can't even pass the Bechdel test. If you guys don't know, describe the Bechdel test, Rachel.
I think we've already described the Bechdel test before.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Look up the Bechdel test. It's interesting.
But yeah, so the female characters in this movie, what were your problems with Sigourney Weaver's character?
My problems with Sigourney Weaver's character were that she was sexualized, like, I would say 70% of the time in this movie.
Yeah.
She was like sexy demon. She was taking off her pants in her apartment.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to happen with that?
And even in some of the other scenes, like the earlier scenes, like, she may not be sexualized in that she's, like, showing skin or, like, acting provocatively, but she is sexualized through the lens of Bill Murray's character, like, constantly.
And through the lens of the actual camera.
Yeah, that too. I mean, it focuses on her body a lot more, and her movement in reaction to his advances, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Subtle, but it's there, and it's a problem, for sure.
It's an old pornographer's trick.
Wink, wink. Rachel worked for 50 years in the porn industry. She knows.
I actually have a giant mustache, and I smoke cigars.
Yeah. This is radio, folks. You have no idea.
You don't. I'm balding. But I'm still, like, keeping long hair in the back. But it's, like, curly.
Exactly.
I'm definitely... a shyster.
Oh, man. So, yeah, Sigourney Weaver's character constantly sexualized.
Sure.
And then Damsel in Distress also tied in with that at the same time.
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't know why, but she starts warming to Bill Murray's character, like, about halfway through this movie.
I think it's implied it's because he achieved, like, a celebrity status.
Yeah, but I don't get the impression that she's, like... a gold digger or anything. Like, I feel like she just like, oh, I didn't like this guy because he was unsuccessful. Yeah. Now that he's successful, I like him. I think that's a harmful stereotype too.
Sure.
Because, like, for men to engage with, especially.
How do you mean?
Like, when young men are growing up, if they feel like, oh, you know, if I just do this one thing, if I accomplish this task, or if I, like, raise myself to a certain level, then this woman will like me. Like, that can be true in a sense if you're, you know, able to be self-aware and realize that, you know, somebody has a problem with certain aspects of your personality, mm-hmm. and you change them, mm-hmm. and you make change and you grow as a person. That's what that's what being a human being is growth.
Yeah.
If you're able to grow, truly grow, then maybe that woman will eventually be like, oh, I like this new person.
Yeah. No, I agree wholeheartedly. It's harmful for little boys and little girls to see.
Yeah, Bill Murray has no personal growth at all in this movie.
No, he doesn't.
And so the reward seems... The reward of the woman...
Yeah.
The classic trope seems really forced and just a terrible message to send to kids.
Yeah, you know? to anyone, to any human being.
Yeah. But, I mean, especially with kids, because they, like, these ideas get so deeply ingrained.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you can't get them out. And you can't, because they're so, like, wrapped up in their identity. Yeah, it's like, I mean, people, that's why in some ways I, like, feel bad for the people who are so angry about the female reboot, is because, like, I mean, man, you're a slave to this. Like, it's just a movie. Like, you don't have to, like, when somebody else doesn't like a movie you don't like, that's no big deal.
It's really not. It's not an attack on your identity.
Yeah. I mean,
it's just...
Me and Rachel disagree on movies all the time. It's okay.
We do.
I mean, there's movies that I love that Rachel will not watch with me.
What?
And that's fine.
Like what?
Like Starship Troopers, for instance.
I won't watch that again. I told you I wouldn't.
And that's fine. You know, I know you hate that movie. I think it's great. I legitimately do. It doesn't matter. It's no big deal.
It's no big deal. Guys, I'm blinking twice for help. It is a big deal.
Oh, man.
Just kidding.
But yeah, I get it if you're like, you're the movie guy in your group. Or like,
yeah,
that's, you know, that's what defines you, is like, mm-hmm. The movies that you like. I don't think that's a bad way to live. But it is when, you know, you take personal offense to somebody criticizing the art that you like. The art and entertainment that you enjoy.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. It's okay for you to look at it with a critical eye.
Yeah, it's okay. It doesn't diminish the fact that it exists and that the intention of the artist was the same, which is to educate in some way.
Yeah, like all kinds of problematic shit. Like, all the time. Like, it's hard to wrestle with sometimes.
Yeah. It doesn't make you a bad person. It makes you a complicated person.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I love Indiana Jones movies. We talked about that.
Yeah.
But it's got a bunch of big problems. This movie has a lot of problems. I can't say that I care for this one as much.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think it's a very good movie.
And I was talking to Jordan about this today. It's a theory that I think I haven't invented it. It's already been invented. I just named it something else called a fly in the bisque.
Oh, yeah. I like that. I like that analogy.
Which is like, it can be the most delicious lobster bisque made with the highest quality ingredients prepared by the fucking best of the best. But if there's a fly in it, I'm not going to eat it.
I agree. Yeah, you know? And it kind of like, it permeates the whole thing and just kind of sours the entire experience.
Yeah, because I can't trust these filmmakers. There's no way.
Because let's talk about this, because a lot of people that like this movie talk about the humor and how they think it is really funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, honestly, like if I'm looking at it like from just one dimension, I do think that the comedy is funny in this movie. The problem is that it's the context surrounding all the humor. Because all of Bill Murray's jokes, which are legitimately, like, quick-witted, at least, are all couched in some kind of predatory or sexist behavior.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to watch it and laugh at the jokes that he's making because of why he's making them.
Yeah.
And it's just like that fly in the bisque. It sours that whole experience. So, like, I can't enjoy some of the jokes when he's talking about, like, you know, to the woman that he's testing at the beginning. Like, oh, have you done this before? Like, you know, she hasn't gotten any of the things right, but he's flirting with her. And it's supposed to be like, haha, you know, he's a suave dude. It's funny. Like, I just, I don't see it.
Yeah. No, I don't get it.
Yeah.
One of the other things that do you have something in particular you wanted to talk about?
Well, I guess, like, still just going along in the vein of comedy, like, the parts where it works, I think, are, like, when he's, you know, being smarmy to the head of the EPA, who's a dick. And we'll talk about the EPA here in a second.
Oh, yeah. Don't trust the government. And then on the next page it says, particularly the EPA.
Yeah. You know what? Let's jump into that because that's a funny observation you had.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is almost, you know, this is like 34 years ago that this movie came out. Back in the Ronald Reagan era.
Oh, my God.
And the biggest human villain in this movie is the head of the EPA.
Oh, my God.
Which is so funny in light of recent events.
Evil Empire. That's us.
Yeah.
We started it.
So it's interesting. Like, the agency of protecting the environment is viewed alone as villainous and is personified by, like, a bumbling
bureaucrat.
A huffing and puffing bureaucrat that shouldn't have the power that he has, type of thing.
Right. Sorry, Bones is looking at us like he needs to go outside.
Yeah, he is. But you were mentioning about, you were talking about how you felt about how the EPA is portrayed in this movie, and I was trying to push you along towards that to tell me a little bit about it.
The EPA is this, it's like portrayed by this bumbling, uptight, bureaucratic asshole who just loves enforcing the rules for the sake of enforcing the rules.
Right.
And it's basically like they talk about taxes and like Rick Moranis' character is a fucking tax accountant.
Yeah.
But the EPA, it's fucking crazy. The don't trust the government, but particularly the EPA, it gets me because, you know, you don't, when you're a kid, you don't think about, like, the political messaging that could be going into your mind.
Well, what's funny to me, too, is, like, if I'm watching this movie, just taking that character on its own.
Yeah.
Like, the EPA chief, he has some legitimate concerns. Like, they talk about how they have unlicensed nuclear particle accelerators on their backs and shit like that. Like, that shit is dangerous to the environment. Like, I understand why this guy is here.
And he's not only talking about, like, trees and birds and shit. He's talking about your drinking water, assholes.
And so, like, yeah, I believe that he should be there to, like, check on the Ghostbusters and make sure what they're doing is tip-top. But, like, in what world does somebody ignore the evidence that's right in front of them for, like, every... Like, so Bill Murray's a huge dick to him. I get that. And he doesn't actually get to see anything that they're doing.
Yeah.
So he comes back with a warrant. But he acts like a complete prick the entire time.
He does.
When people try to explain to him why he shouldn't be doing what he's doing, he doesn't listen at all and just says, like, don't listen to them. Just do what I say. Like, he's totally the demagoguery there is just outrageous.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like, it's not a realistic portrayal of a human being. And I get that it's played for comedic effect.
Oh, yeah, and for, like, allegorical effect.
But at the same time, it's done at the expense of an institution that's important.
Right.
And so that does damage to the, like, public consciousness.
Yeah, it absolutely does.
People grow up and they think of the EPA and they think of this character.
Yeah, they think they're villains. They think that they're bureaucrats. They're wasting their hard-earned tax dollars.
Yeah, so it's not hard to convince people of that come election time.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, that's important to mention. And I wrote down all the brand names that were, like, all the product placement.
Yeah. There is quite a bit. It is an 80s movie, yeah.
Budweiser. Cheez-Its. Cheez-Its had a fucking hand in this.
Yeah.
Cheez-Its were all over the place.
Cheez-Its made a ton of money.
Perrier. Coke. Wishbone salad dressing. Oscar Mayer. And Lay's.
But I don't know if we can count Oscar Mayer, because that was done in kind of a negative way, where he, like, opens her fridge, and he's like, what is, look at all this junk food, and he, like, holds up an Oscar Mayer package, he's like, you eat this, really? Like, as if it's, like, disgusting and harmful for you. That's almost like some negative press, I'd say.
But it doesn't matter, because someone said Oscar Mayer.
Yeah, that's all that matters, because we're all stupid fucking idiots.
We're all consumer whores. Like,
I heard that word once before. I'm going to put that in my body. I'm going to put that inside me. I heard that name once.
I trust it. I trust it. Yeah. I saw it in a movie.
Don't worry.
Come on.
Oh, man.
The dogs are coming in now.
Yeah, I mean, I was not surprised by the fact that there was advertising.
Yeah.
I mean, the surprising part was how much there was for Cheez-Its.
There was just so much advertising for Cheez-Its.
And I'll admit, we did have to look up whether or not Stay Puft marshmallows were a real thing. Turns out they're not.
Yeah.
Which, I guess that's cool. But Rachel, you had an interesting theory on why that is.
Conspiracy theory, Rachel!
Yeah.
I'm the opposite of Alex Jones right now. I'm just like...
No, you're the same. We're just people in a house, like, screaming into the void. Like, whatever comes into our brains. We're very much like Alex Jones in a lot of ways.
That's what I'm saying. I'm just on the opposite. I'm like the yin to his yang.
Yeah.
Like, my theories are going to be, the water's turning the frogs gay. Let's have a party!
Oh, man. But yeah, what was you had a thought about why Stay Puft marshmallows are not a real brand.
I think that the producers wanted to not have to pay Jet Puff.
Yeah.
Or Michelin. If they made toys.
Exactly.
That's what I think. I think they wanted all the profits.
I think that's a brilliant theory, and I think it might actually have a lot of weight to it.
Yeah.
I think that you might be right. Because this movie is a total, like, franchise builder. Like, the whole point of this movie, and the whole point of the new movie, it was even stated that they wanted to build a media franchise.
Yeah.
Where it's like, now we're making toys, here's a Ghostbusters cartoon.
T-shirts,
you know, Halloween costumes, accessories, like, everything.
Coloring books.
Advertising stuff where they have them on, like... You know, a pack of, like a bag of lettuce or something. Like,
yeah, it's fucking crazy.
Like, man. They got Slimer on a fucking sticker that's on a pear.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Like, it's all about, you know, building this, like, empire. And so, yeah, they definitely had Stay Puft Marshmallow Man toys. I've seen them.
Yeah.
And I think you might be right. It was a money move, a smart financial move.
Yeah.
To make that character, which they knew would be marketable and sellable to children, to make sure they get the whole piece of the pie.
Oh, yeah.
That's genius.
It is. Yeah. That's evil genius shit right there.
Somebody was thinking ahead.
Yeah. Maybe somebody is going to listen to this podcast and be like, oh, shit, why aren't we doing that anymore? And then he just goes and buys a bunch of cocaine.
Yeah.
And then just takes this advice and just starts making, like, evil 80s moves again.
Oh, man. I mean, at least, you know, the enemy you know.
And in all that.
Yeah.
Read American Psycho.
Oh, man. But yeah, speaking of, what else was it? There was something I was going to talk about. Oh, like somebody making toys out of this. Do you think, I never saw a Gozer toy, but I think that would be strange if somebody like opened up an action figure that was like female David Bowie.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
David Bowie is the ultimate evil demigod in these people's eyes.
Yeah. With, like, ultimate lightning bolt action.
Yeah.
Press a button and her fingertips light up.
Yeah, and her eyeballs are red. I bet they had one. I'll bet they had one.
I bet they did. I just think that would be a creepy toy to give a kid.
Oh, I want a creepy. I want it. If there is one, and my listeners, you love me, just find it and send me the link for it. I'll pay for it.
Oh, man.
Like, just, if that exists, I want to have it.
If you can find a Gozer action figure in female David Bowie form, send us an email at recipefordisastershow@gmail.com because we want that.
Because I talk shit about being consumer whores, but I am a consumer whore. And I'm just like, yeah, I'll pay some fucking dude.
Where would we even put that in here?
Um,
right by the front door, just hanging from a string.
People walk in, oh my god.
We would take it out of the box because we're those people.
Hey honey, I forgot the potato salad. Oh my god.
We can put it all over the house for it to be surprising and scary.
Yes.
Just like an elf on a shelf, but it's a gozer on a shelf.
Oh my god, I love it.
Oh. Contribute to our happiness, listeners.
Please do. There's a lot that can be done with that. We can make stop motion videos of it like stalking us at night with knives and shit. Because that's what's happening. If you have that action figure in your home, that's what's really happening to you. Uh-huh. So we're going to make a safety video.
A safety video? Oh my god, I'm going to wear a vest.
Oh man, what else do you have on your notes about Ghostbusters? Oh,
I'm the one who takes notes.
Well, I like your notes. They provide a good guide, and you have some interesting thoughts that I don't think about. So it's cool for me to hear them, you know?
Oh, thanks. I think I did laugh a few times in this movie.
Yeah.
And the part that made me laugh the most is when Rick Moranis' character is all possessed, and he like runs away from, what is it, the cops?
There's like a horse-drawn carriage, and he's like whispering to the horse, like,
that's right.
When you see the sign, all our oppressors will be like overthrown, and you know we'll all be free, or something like that.
Oh yeah, and the guy who's driving the horse is like, hey, he just pulls the wagon, I make the deals. And then McMoranis looks at him and then just bolts away and says, you will perish in flames. It's hilarious.
I do love it's a shame that Rick Moranis's character is also a perv, because he's pretty funny. I really like Rick Moranis, and we're gonna end up watching some of his movies too, like Honey I Shrunk the Kids and stuff like that, Spaceballs. But yeah, his character has some problems too.
Oh yeah, he's a little sexual harasser.
Yeah.
He won't leave her alone even though she's visibly uncomfortable around him. She regularly declines his invitations and he can't take a fucking hint.
But even he gets a reward, even though he doesn't really know it. Because when he gets possessed,
he gets to
and
bang
she
her.
Gets possessed, it implies that they have sex. They definitely make out. And I'm pretty sure when they wake up off that altar, like all stretching and shit, like that meant that they just had sex.
Yeah.
I know that that wasn't, like, really her choosing to be with him, but it's still kind of portrayed as, like, oh, look, the plucky little guy, like, got some. Good for him, even though it wasn't really him. Like, good for him type of thing. And I think that's a dangerous message also.
It's like, is there consent? Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, no consent on any side, but but it's still portrayed as, like, a reward for the man.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, yeah, try hard enough and you'll get something. Like, even if it's demon-possessed sex on top of a skyscraper,
that's what you'll get. This actually sounds hot. Say it again.
Demon-possessed sex on top of a skyscraper.
Yes, that is what I want right now.
Wow.
Turn off this podcast.
You're kinkier than I remember.
Oh, man. Does anybody have a demon they can send us? Oh, I just need to be possessed.
But yeah, I mean, this movie on the whole, like I said, I mean, the plot does progress and it wraps up nicely.
Sure.
It treats a lot of its characters with disdain.
Oh, God, yes.
Mostly the female and minority characters.
Oh, yeah. And they were like, Gozer is a girl?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Even little things like that they just couldn't resist. Oh, my God. Gozer's a girl?
Ew.
Whatever.
These are the same people that say there's only two genders.
Yeah.
Everyone else, I'm gonna hit with my fists.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about some of the other characters real quick.
Okay.
Because we've talked about Bill Murray and we've talked about Rick Moranis. What about Harold Ramis as Egon, the like super smart tall one? How do you feel about him?
He's the most attractive.
Is he really out of all of them? Why is that?
If I had to marry Foot Kill, I guess I'd marry him.
Who would you kill? Dan Aykroyd or
Bill Murray?
And you would fuck Dan Aykroyd?
I guess.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I do think that Egon would probably be the best choice for a long-term partner.
Yeah.
Bill
who would
Murray
you marry?
Is,
who would you marry, Foot Kill?
I think I'm actually going to say the same thing.
Yeah?
Yeah. I would marry Egon because although he is consumed by his work, he does notice and speak to other people. He's an odd man, but he can
Yeah. He actually seems to be the most normal of all of them in a lot of ways.
And he has a vision and he can work.
Because like, Dan Aykroyd is basically a man baby who just loves ghosts. Like, you don't want to be around that guy forever. No. Trust me. But he would be really eager for one night of sex because he probably hasn't gotten any in a long time. So it would probably be pretty good.
He'd do his goddamnedest.
Yeah. And he then really he'd be would. Off to the next thing and you'd never have to see him again.
Yeah.
Thank God.
I think that we really thought this through. Good job. Yeah.
And, why wouldn't you kill Bill Murray's character?
Kill the shit out of that guy.
Like, this just needs to end. Like, yeah, it's you, Bill. Sorry.
And, generally when I think about Mary Fuck Kill, I'm like, how would I kill that person? It wouldn't be with poison this time.
Oh.
I think it'd probably be a hammer.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I don't think that I could do that, but I always assume that when you play Mary Fuck Kill, you don't have to do the killing, because that changes things for sure. Like, I don't want to kill anyone. I just assume they, go into a room and, the bottom falls out on the floor and they fall into a pit of spikes, far away where I don't have to see or hear it.
Sanitized death.
They're just gone forever. Or maybe just taken away to another place where I don't see them or hear from them ever again.
Well, I don't think you're playing Mary Fuck Kill right then.
I mean, I guess you have to get your hands dirty with the other two, Mary and Fuck. Like, you gotta be a part of that.
You don't get your hands dirtier than when you get married.
These things don't just happen in a vacuum. Like, if you're killing Bill Murray with your bare hands, think about if you can live with that, mister.
Yeah.
Or don't play Fuck, Marry, Kill.
That's right. That's right.
This is ridiculous.
This is ridiculous. I'm really glad that we had this moment, though.
Yeah.
I know why I'm married to you.
I love it.
Because of our Mary Fuck Kill patterns.
Yeah, well, that's the quote for the episode right there. who would we fuck, Mary Kill? It's built in. I love it. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Perfect. So, let's see. What else did I write down?
Yeah, anything else on there before we wrap up?
Oh, just that I just wanted to point out again, just to bookend this. Revelations is so metal, and they bring up Revelations. Yeah. And it's just the sky black as sackcloth, and the moon was as blood.
Yeah. Revelation really is fucking awesome. I would love to see a movie, a big budget Hollywood movie that just took the Book of Revelations out to its logical conclusion.
Oh, yeah.
And, don't give it to one of these fuckers like Ridley Scott making that Exodus movie that sucked. Or
this guy sucked since
that
the
80s. Noah movie. Oh my god!
Did you hear me, Ridley? You've sucked since the 80s.
Yeah, he hasn't had a soul since the 80s. I don't know what happened. Like, he saw James Cameron making that money, and he was like, "Yeah, okay."
Yeah, I really want that money.
Yeah, Jesus Christ!
Let it eat up his talent.
Mm-hmm. It totally consumed him.
Yep.
It's sad. We could have better things, but we have Alien Covenant. Blah.
Oh
my god! What a piece of gray paste.
Take that, Ridley Scott.
Oh.
Have an original vision, old man.
It's not even bad enough to warrant watching again. Like, at least bad movies are fun.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was just a slog. It was just a sermon. I couldn't do it.
That Alien franchise needs to just die.
Yeah.
It was good once. Now it's not.
I hope... I'm not going to speak out against that in case the government comes after me. What do you mean, kill the Alien franchise? That makes me a lot of money, Rachel.
Oh, my God. I bet it does.
I guess that's... Other than, this being a kind of a piece of conservative propaganda.
Yeah.
Nobody steps on churches in my town.
Oh, yeah, he does say that, doesn't he?
What the fuck?
I didn't understand that. That was kind of strange.
Yeah. It really was.
Like, for somebody who's such an asshole, you care about church? Really? I don't know.
And why just in your town? Yeah. What if they were in Jackson, Mississippi?
People can step on churches anywhere but here, mister.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. was it a plug to be we value Christian values and family values.
I mean, there's another element of Christianity when the cardinal comes to visit the mayor in response to, what's the church's response to the ghost situation. There is some, Christian stuff that was injected in this. And they talk about, there's Bible references, there's, soft references, the Hittites and Sumeria, Babylonians, that kind of stuff. You know, there's a little bit of that in there. I'm not sure why. I guess it's just to draw in a larger and more diverse audience.
You mean, like, or a less diverse audience?
Well, more diverse, I think. Because, like, this movie can appeal to, like you said, your dad loves this movie.
I didn't say that.
Or he liked this movie, or let you watch it.
Yeah.
Which, this movie should have been PG-13. It's definitely inappropriate for children, and that's going to be in my recommendation, is not to let children watch this Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah, don't do that. Their heads will get filled with all kinds of propaganda. Don't.
If you're raising your kid with media as an assistant or as a full-time, you know, way to raise your kids, don't let them watch this movie. It's bad for them.
Yeah. It's bad for them until they can analyze and evaluate what they're seeing.
Unless you have that kind of relationship where you can explain, like, what's wrong with some of the characters in this movie. Because there's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot to swallow for, like, a six-year-old, yeah. I would say, like, preteens. They're going to see it anyway at their friend's house. Just be open to discuss it with them.
Yeah. I mean, and discuss this with the man children that are, you know, throwing this hate on the internet for some reason. I mean, I know they're still out there. They didn't just die when this movie did, when the reboot movie went away. Like, they're still out there. They're still, like, all around having these feelings about women, and I don't understand why that is. Like, please, someone help me understand.
Oh, God, I'm not asking for anyone to help me understand.
I just want to get it so that I can respond properly. Because I really think that some people are just, like, super confused or don't have an idea. Like, people don't understand each other, so they don't understand why they hate each other. And maybe if they understood each other, they would understand that it's stupid to hate each other. Like, we don't need to have these fights.
Well, like, and also, that's a super hippie thing to say, but also, like,
it is,
we can have these fights, but let's like, come at it like a team rather than against each other.
Yeah,
like a team against a problem. How about let's, like, join forces and fight against something we all agree on. Let's fight against poverty. And we can disagree on how to do it.
I mean, you know, that all sounds nice and everything, but let's just get to the point where people aren't threatening to rape and murder each other over a fucking Ghostbusters movie.
Over a... not even, like, a good movie.
It's, I mean, you know, I can understand death threats if, you know, like, a German director remade Schindler's List. Like, that... I can see, like... justified protest there.
Yeah.
But, like, this is fucking Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
It's a movie about, like, three man babies who go and shoot lasers at ghosts and cause property damage. Like, this is not a movie that anyone needs to have any kind of significant emotional investment in.
Oh, that's the hill they're gonna die on, Jordan. That's the hill they're gonna die on.
Oh, my God.
That's one of my favorite sayings. That's the hill you're gonna die on? Okay. They are. They're going to die on Ghostbusters Hill, the hill that was forgotten. And, like, nobody's going to find their bodies for centuries. And then eventually they're going to find their bodies and dig them up and be like, look at these fucking idiots. And just throw their bodies back.
Look at how much time they wasted on this shit.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, it's 2018, and we're talking about masculinity through the lens of Ghostbusters. How have we not fixed this problem yet? It's been 34 years.
Come on, Jesus Christ. Come on, guys.
We're in the dark ages of America right now. It makes me so mad
and so
sad.
I'm so scared.
And scared, yes. I don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, man. Just America being like, I'm going to be a giant bully and you're going to give me my way. And then everybody's like, oh, no, we're not. Now we're backing. We're going to fucking slap the little brother down.
Oh, my God.
Like, we are going to get slapped down. New Zealand, will you take us? We can do things.
Yeah, so... I mean, I think it's clear we both think this movie's a disaster. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for a number of reasons, just, you know, mainly the misogyny, the culture of hate that's kind of sprung from its fan base, the overall just, like, you know, mediocre comedy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I still like the gadgets. I like the tech, but, you know, I can have that without all this shit that's in it. Just watch a cartoon. That's probably not going to have as much sexism in it.
Or we could just watch Bad Santa.
Yeah, that's true.
Bad Santa is my favorite Christmas movie.
We will watch that around Christmas time.
Yes.
But anyway, I think, you know, that's it for today, unless you got any final thoughts.
Just, like, let this one die. But if you like it, that's fine. Relax. It's just a movie about men shooting lasers at ghosts.
And yeah, just take it easy.
Get some sunshine. Take it easy, please. Walk outside. Talk to some people who aren't on the internet. And eat something good for you. Man. Wash your hands.
Yeah.
That's my advice.
Thank you so much, you guys. You know, reach out to us on Facebook if you want, Recipe for Disaster Podcast. Hit us up with an email, recipefordisastershow@gmail.com. Write us a review on Apple Podcasts. If it's 5 stars, then we'll read it out loud on the air and probably talk about it too a little bit. And thank you personally for writing it. I think that's pretty much it for today.
Yeah, golf clap for us. Just excellent job.
That's wonderful. All right. Bye. See you guys later.